The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Hey, we welcome you back to the program. Thanks for joining us, folks. Nice to have you with us, as always, getting it started with more of the best in money advice. We're going to continue, once again, to do what we do best on this program, and that is answer your money questions. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. We talked a lot about buckets last hour, talked a lot about yields and bonds and all that stuff. In fact, we're going to continue that in just a little bit here, just as part of our wealth education segment, just for a segment or so. Before we get to your emails, we will always take your phone calls. Professor Rick Plum joins me once again from Lucia Capital Group, talking about several different topics, as I said, maybe all at once. So yield to maturity. Now, we're not going to get intellectual on this stuff. But honestly, it's important to understand when you're buying bonds, the relationship between bonds and interest rates, and the relationship between what you're getting, what the bond is kicking out, and what your actual yield is, how much money you're actually getting off of an investment. That's called yield to maturity. So we're going to talk about this. Professor Plum did this with our TV audience. We're going to do it again with the radio folks here now that they've joined us. So talking to you about your most important money issues, this is what we do. And your chance to call in, by the way, is right now. I would suggest you do so because we do have plenty of room on the phones right now. Reach us in studio, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-PLANNER. Your phone calls do come first at all times before anything else. So if you're on hold, hang tight for just a moment or two. And as for your emails, you can send them here to us at wealthed.com, our website, right there where it says Find Your Answer link. The link right there near the top of the page. Giving you all the advice you need without anything you don't need is our Professor Rick Plum, right?
That's me.
Nothing you don't need. We're here again this hour, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. By the way, you need to know if you're on track to retire when you want to. That's why we talk about this every single day. You need to know if you're on track to retire with enough money saved up that can help you get through the rest of your life, however long it happens to be. It's important that you check with your financial advisor to see if your financial plan is going to get you from there to here, here to there, or there to here, whichever you want. The number at Lucia Capital Group, they do this all day, 800-644-1150. Talk to the Brain Trust advisors about your retirement plan. If you don't have one, you get one. 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. You can also reach us on the air, 877-PLANNER. I would suggest you call now, 877-752-6637. So now, Professor Plum. Bonds, yield, I think most people know the basics of bonds, which is you hand an entity of money, whether it's a company or a municipality or the federal government or something, it's a loan. You lend them some money. They pay you back a certain amount of interest, which is stated generally on...
Stated on the bond.
On the bond. And at the end of the period of time, as you get paid the interest, they will return to you, if all goes well, it will return
amount.
To you the face amount. You put $100,000. I don't like to use $100,000, but I will.
I did it just because it's easy math.
It is easy math. So I'm not suggesting that anybody with only $100,000 should put $100,000 into a bond. But let's just pretend. You give them $100,000. There's a stated interest rate on that bond. And let's say it's 3%. I'm just throwing a number. You're going to get $3,000 per year.
Yeah, most bonds are interest only. Only mortgage bonds really are amortized, meaning you
right.
get principal and interest back. So if I buy a bond, typically it's an interest only payment. And so in your example, if I was at 3% stated interest and I were to buy it at issue for the face amount, give them $100,000, they pay me $3,000 for the life of that bond. The maturity date is stated on the bond at some point. So it tells me when they will give me back my $100,000 or my face amount of that bond.
Right. So you're getting $3,000 in this example, and then at the end of the period of time, 10 years, 15, 20, whatever it is, they're going to give you back the face amount of that bond. Now, there are bonds out there.
Now, bond values change pretty much every day, and they change with interest rates. The amount that the bond is worth today, if I were trying to sell it today, now, I can't sell it back to the issuing company. We have a contractual agreement that they'll pay me back at some point in the future. And they're usually not going to pay me back any sooner unless interest rates have gone down dramatically.
Right.
And they can call it back away from me, which means I'm stuck holding the bag and I got to go find something at a lower interest rate. But when interest rates are going up, they're not going to call it. They're not going to pay. They're going to wait until the last minute to pay me back.
So
if I wanted to sell it, and that's the way bonds are valued, what is it worth to sell today?
So let's use an example. Okay, Professor Plum? let's say there's a bond out there that was issued 15 years ago. It's a 20-year bond, all right?
So it's only got 5 years left.
5 years left. Now, the person who bought it, they've been holding on to it for the last 15 years. They put $100,000 into it, and it's paying 6%, all right? They've been getting $6,000 a year on their $100,000 investment. They decide, for whatever reason, that they don't want it anymore.
They want to sell it.
They want to sell it.
But 6% is very attractive.
Of course. And I mean, so what kind of an idiot would ever want to sell us a bond?
Well, it's because right now somebody may give them a lot more than the face amount of that bond. In your hypothetical example, the face amount of the bond is $100,000. And it's got 5 years left. And so somebody may be out there saying, you know what? I want that bond. It's a very good quality bond. I really want it. And it's paying me a nice cash flow. I'm willing to give you $120,000 for that $100,000 face amount. And I will get $6,000 a year for the next 5 years. And then I'll get my $100,000
right.
back, not and, the 120.
Okay, so now, but here's the situation. You've given that person $120,000 for this $100,000 bond. It's still kicking off $6,000 a year, but you're getting $6,000 a year on your $120,000 investment.
Right. So
which
got,
is
this is where they look at, and a lot of statements will just issue yield. What is yield? Regardless of whether it's a stock or a bond, yield is a very simple calculation. It's the current cash flow or expected cash flow over a 1 year period of time divided by the current price. So my yield in this case was $6,000. Because I'm getting 6% on a $100,000 bond, but it's not calculated on a $100,000 value. It's calculated on today's value, which was 120. So I'm getting 6% on 120.
You're That's getting
$6,000 on 120, which is a 5% yield. 5% yield still sounds pretty good today, right?
Well, you would think so. I put $120,000 out. I'm getting $6,000. It's only 5% that I'm getting on my money.
But I'm still 5%.
I'm 5%. So for the next
yield.
Right. Now, for the next 5 years, I'm going to get this. At the end of 5 years, this bond is matured.
Right. And the company will give me back my $100,000. So how do we take into consideration that we put in 120, we received back 30, and now we've got 100,000 coming back to us at the end. So we put in 120, and over the 5 years, we got back a total $6,000 a year plus $100,000 at the end, a total of $130,000. What's my real rate of return? And the calculation for determining that is your yield to maturity. And that takes into consideration the potential loss to a premium or gain if I bought it at a discount. And that particular bond, if those were the right parameters today, has a 1.8% real rate of return to me. My yield to maturity is 1.8%, which is about what you would expect. But you get a lot of people get lost in the interest rate. It's a 6% bond. No, it's a 1.8% return to me over the next 5 years.
Right.
It's a 5% yield. True, the cash flow is 5%. But next year it won't be 5%, and the year after, and the year after. The yield changes every year. The yield changes based on the value. And as you get closer to that maturity date, the value is going to come down because the month before the thing matures, the value is going to be $100,000 because nobody's going to pay you a premium for a bond that matures in a month. They're not going to give you $120,000 when it matures next month for $100,000. That just doesn't work that way. So you're going to see the value come up. Now, the other side works just as well. If you can find somebody who's willing to sell it at a low premium, a discount, maybe instead of spending more than the face amount, I can buy it for less than the face amount. But then you have to ask yourself, why are they selling it for less than the face amount? They have obviously either need the cash really desperately, but that doesn't work in the large markets, or they're worried about the bond itself actually making the payment. We saw General Motors bonds before they were taken over selling at deep, deep, deep discounts. And they were making their payments, and so the yield was like 40, but people were worried that they weren't going to get their principal back. And so it was a very deep, deep discount. So some people made money on them, some people lost on them.
Right.
But you have to understand what it is you're buying and what your rates of return really are and how they fit in the portfolio. Now, that's still 1.8% over 5 years. In this hypothetical area, I think you may be able to do better somewhere else. But if you're comfortable with it, now you can evaluate. That same bond, instead of being a 5 year left to remaining maturity, if it had 10 years left to mature, now my yield to maturity is 3.8 or 3.5%. And if that same bond had 20 years left to maturity, it's 4.5%. But in each of those different cases, am I willing to invest the money today to earn 3.6% over the next 10 years? If your answer is no, not an appropriate investment. If your answer is yes, potentially appropriate investment. On a 20-year hold, 4.5%, not that excited.
Right.
But now you have something to gauge it by.
Yes.
To look at it.
Which is why yield to maturity is an important thing to understand, which is why we're telling you about this. Yes, you on our example, you made $6,000 a year for 5 years on that bond, that $120,000 investment. You got $30,000
in interest.
But guess what? You put out $120,000, you lost $20,000 of it. So you really only got $10,000 net.
Overall return.
Overall on a $120,000 investment over 5 years. That's why the yield to maturity is important. Okay, 877-PLANNER, give us a call. We got lines open. Come on. Brain Trust standing by. We're here to answer those questions. When we come back, don't go away. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking your phone calls, but we need you to call if you have any questions. 877-PLANNER. We've done a couple of emails so far today and had a nice discussion on both buckets and bucket one and getting a little bit more out of bucket one. And by the way, yield to maturity and understanding exactly why it is that perhaps you're getting, you know, even though you're getting $6,000 a year on what looked to be an original $100,000 face value of a bond, your real rate of return, your total at the end of it all was like 1.8%.
So when is a 6% return or cash flow not a 6% return?
It's in that exact scenario that we gave. Hope you folks heard that and followed along. It's important stuff. Wealth education. Once again, lines open, 877-PLANNER. Give us a call. We're here for you to talk to you about whatever money issue that you have. Emails at wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. This one from Bob in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'm 62, single, own my house and two cars. My 401k, currently at $1.3 million, is still at the company. I left in 2013 after 40 years. I was going to apply for Social Security when I saw one of your bucket shows on windfall elimination and Social Security and got to wondering, when I roll over my 401k, is that considered a windfall? It's an oddly named thing. I'm also wondering which is better for me to do, roll over my 401k and make withdrawals to live on, or take Social Security, which will be $1,750 a month, which will be comfortable in my current situation. Okay, first of all, windfall elimination, go ahead.
Well, the 401k by itself, unless it's the thrift savings plan or it's in conjunction with another pension where you did not pay into Social Security. Now, if you're getting $1,750 a month at age 62, you have paid in 30 good years of Social Security. You will not be subject to the windfall elimination provision. And when I mentioned the TSP, that's only for people that had the TSP that also had the civil service retirement plan. They have an issue with the windfall elimination provision. The windfall elimination provision comes into play, and the government pension offset, which we can talk about, if you have a pension from work where you did not pay into the Social Security system. As I mentioned, for to have this kind of a benefit, you've been paying into the Social Security system, and you've been paying it in for quite a while. To have a reduced age 62 benefit of $1,750, yeah, you've been paying in, and you've got your 30 years. I did say 30, because that's what it takes to get rid of the windfall elimination provision. The 401k by itself, not an issue. You can roll that over. You can, you know, leave it where it is. If they'll make distributions, whatever the case may be, that's up to you. Now, from a strategic planning standpoint, should you live off of the 401k right now and let your Social Security grow? Or should you start taking your Social Security and let your 401k grow? Well, it depends. How long are you going to live? If you can live on $1,750 a month, I would say you need to start spending more money. You got $1.3 million sitting in reserves over here that you've worked very hard to build up. Let's get you to spend some money. Get this economy back on track. So I would probably look at saying, if you've got longevity, then I would potentially defer taking my Social Security for a little while. And I would live off of the 401k, at least now while I can take a bigger chunk out of it in the 15% income tax bracket. Now, as a single individual, you don't have a very large 15% income tax bracket, maybe $45,000, $48,000. depending upon your itemized deductions. But if you can live on $1,750, my guess is you don't have a mortgage and you don't have a lot of deductible expenses, which is fine. And so I would probably start pulling that $1.3 million down now, between now and age 70, because if you don't, your required minimum distribution is going to jump your tax bracket quite nicely. I mean, even at $1.3 million, if you just kept it stagnant, you took out the earnings every year, that's still a $50,000 a year required minimum distribution. So it's a big issue of pay me now or pay me later when it comes to the taxes. I would potentially consider living off of my 401k now, and I would even consider doing some Roth conversions and use up not only the 15% bracket but the 25% bracket and try to move a lot of that money over to the Roth IRA between now and age 70 and a half when the required minimum distribution kicks in. And if, as I mentioned before, if you have longevity, when your much larger Social Security kicks in. You think 1750 is comfortable? Try about $3,200 a month. That'll really help you out.
You're saying because it's 1750 at age 62?
Yes.
Yes. Now, okay, so you said doing Roth conversions. Yes. We've talked about spending the bracket, which would be 15%. You're saying going to the 25s. Why would you suggest that he convert enough, take him into the next tax bracket?
He's going to be in the 25 plus full taxation on his Social Security when he gets to his required minimum distribution age anyway. I mean, he's just not spending enough money. I mean, you take the Social Security that he's earning plus another $50,000, he's going to be paying tax on 85% of his Social Security, and he's going to be paying tax on the $50,000 that's coming out of the required minimum distribution. And that's assuming it doesn't grow. That required minimum distribution, if you actually let it grow for the next years, could be $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 if you let it grow and it actually grows over the next 8 years. So either, you know, and at that point, you're no longer in the 25% bracket. You're way above the bracket. So maybe spending and converting $100,000 now, paying an average maybe a 20-ish bracket, and not paying any tax on your Social Security, and getting most of it or a big chunk of it over to the Roth IRA between now and 70 and a half.
Right.
So when he retires, if we've been moving over 800 out of the 1.3, maybe there's $600,000-$700,000 left in. Your required minimum distribution is only $20,000 or $30,000 compared to $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. Not all of your Social Security is going to be taxable, and you've got a huge tax-free income, you're in the 15% bracket for the rest of your life.
The benefits are there, and we know because we talked about this just a day or two ago, some of the reasons why you might want to consider doing something like a Roth conversion. Now, so when you're trying to consider, do I convert this money over to a Roth, and if I do, how much should I convert? You should consider what tax bracket you're going to be paying it in anyway if you left, right?
Oh, yeah, potentially. For him,
if you left it alone.
He's going to probably be in a higher bracket later in life than he is now. So I would really consider taking the money now and living off and spending it, or if you have longevity, at least mid-80s or longer, deferring taking my Social Security, using up as much of the brackets as I can as a pure bracket where I'm not subjecting my Social Security to taxation on top of the taxation on the distribution, and trying to get as much out or over to a Roth IRA as possible.
So it's sort of biting the bullet now. It's biting the bullet. You're going to either do it now or you're going to do it 7 or 8 years from now.
It's pay me now, pay me more later.
Right.
Which do you want to do?
Exactly. So you would do it now, and by not taking the Social Security while you're doing those conversions, you're allowing it, number one, to grow, and number two, you're avoiding whatever extra taxation might have happened.
Yeah, you've got more room to take money and or to convert in this current bracket.
Yes.
I mean,
now, okay, let's say longevity isn't in the cards for Bob in Cottage Grove. Let's say it's mid-70s. Does anything change with regard to Social Security early? Or what about doing the conversions?
Well, in that case, I mean, the way he's talking, he's not going to spend this money anyway. And if his longevity is mid-80s, then I want to look at who's going to inherit this money.
Well, let's say mid-70s.
Or mid-70s, excuse me. I'm looking at who's going to inherit this money. And if they're in a higher bracket than me, do I really want to benefit them or do I want to benefit me? Who do I want to pay the taxes? If it's somebody that I really, really want to help out, maybe I will take it and pay it in my bracket, which is lower than what their bracket is, which is more efficient. But if it's only somebody, if it's like, a distant relative, a couple cousins, let them deal with it. I'm going to do what's best for me, which is the lower taxes.
If it's a charity, they're going to leave it to because they have no heirs.
If you're going to leave it to charity, don't take any.
Don't take any because they'll get it all tax-free. Okay, 877-PLANNER.
Coming back with more. Give us a call, phone calls, emails, and more when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Oh, it's hot in here, folks. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We're kind of laughing because just as during our last segment or two,
fire alarm.
There was a fire alarm somewhere in here. And I'll tell you what, this is how devoted we are. We don't move. We don't know if there's a fire anywhere in the building. We don't move.
But we could hear the fire alarm. We just kind of wondered what was actually happening.
Yes, we don't know if anybody else could hear it. If it sounded like very, very, very loud crickets, that's what it was. But in the meantime, we're devoted, all right?
But I do like the fact that the engineers and everybody picked up on the burning down the house.
That's what it was, yes, burning down the house. So just a little inside joke. But hey, what the heck? That's why we're laughing.
It makes our day, you know, go easy.
It really does. It really does. All right. Someday there probably will be a real fire.
And we won't know what to do.
We won't know what to do. We're just going to keep doing our show. By the way, you got a call. It's been a slow day on the phones. Give us a call. Line's open. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. I said we have room, and we do. And if you want to email us, you can go to our website, which is wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com. Kevin in Las Vegas. We've talked about this, I think. But Kevin has a question, if we're familiar with, he says, the President Obama is trying to enact new rules governing 401k investment advisors, where they have to comply with rules that govern large advisory groups, even if the advisor is a single person working by themselves. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I am, actually.
And quite familiar.
They are. It is not just 401ks. It's any retirement plan. So the Department of Labor is now gone away from just employment situations, said anything that's a retirement plan, including IRAs, are going to fall under this new rule. And is it a big deal? No. I mean, nothing really is changing dramatically. They have now said that anybody who is advising on a retirement type account has to abide by what's known as a fiduciary standard. Do what's best for the client. And what it used to be was you had to abide by certain suitability standards, depending upon your licensing. All you had to do is the investment had to be suitable for the individual, maybe not the best thing in the world for that person. So they're trying to change, and they're basically trying to legislate ethics. Now, if you were dealing with a person who has a designation, a certified financial planner, CFP, chartered financial consultant, a very large designation, you know, from a designation from a big governing body, they were held to the fiduciary standard already. So it doesn't affect any of those designated individuals because they were already held to that standard. And so also by the time the DOL finally got around to releasing the regulations, they watered them down a lot. They've exempted a lot of this and a lot of that. And so it really doesn't have the teeth that started off with. And if it had the teeth, it was probably going to be a problem and a disaster for most people. And so it's a much ado about nothing in a lot of respects, because most of the people that have been in the industry that have the designations are held to that standard anyway.
Isn't it true that anybody...
And the other side of it is you can't legislate ethics. An unethical person will find a way to be unethical regardless of the rules. I'm sorry, that's just my personal belief. And an ethical person will be ethical regardless of the rules, even if they're not required to do it what's best for the client. An ethical person does it that way to begin with. So creating these rules, it makes people feel good about something, but it really didn't do anything, my opinion.
Yeah, that's not to say that you can't have rules. You got to have rules in place.
Well, no, you do. I agree with the idea, but the way they started off, and you know, they take a look at it as if everything is a commodity. And as a commodity, the only thing that matters is price. You know, a bushel of corn, you know, from vendor A, from vendor B, it's a commodity. You just go for the cheapest price. Mm-hmm. But with advising and financial advising, when you've got the tax code as crazy as it is, when you've got difference in all these different areas, strategically there's things to do, there is a value to advice. And So whether you want just the commodity, you can have that if you want advice. But it was going to make it very, very difficult, the way it was originally written, for anybody to give advice to anybody that didn't have huge bucks, because it just wasn't worth their time to do it. I mean, it sounds callous, but it is. I mean, if I'm going to get paid $10 an hour to do something, I'm probably not going to do it. And so I don't know what the numbers would have worked out to be, but the way they ended up writing it, it got so watered down, it really means nothing.
Yeah, it's the new fiduciary standard or fiduciary rules. I don't know, whatever they call it.
But I think the most important thing there is that if you're dealing with a certified financial planner, a chartered financial consultant, somebody that belongs to a very large organization that oversees the designation, they most likely have to adhere to that fiduciary standard anyway.
Yeah, I think all registered investment advisors are required to follow that.
So now, they were already doing it. If you don't have those standards, now you have to stand up to them. But you were supposed to anyway.
Are they talking about what? People who don't have designations, people without licenses, things like that? What?
Well, you have to have certain licenses. Without designations and without licenses, I mean, obviously you have to have a license, but people who are not registered investment advisors who were basically just stock jockeys, you know, that was one thing, who are just fixed annuity salespeople who are only issuing index annuities. They weren't licensed to sell anything other than fixed annuities. That changes their way of doing business to some degree, which is fine with me because I think a lot of them were not doing the right thing in many cases. It's not the product.
Yeah.
Not the product's fault. But what it does, though, is it takes a lot of those areas. It would have taken a lot of those people out of the business, even the good ones. Even the good ones. And that was part of the problem. That's why they ended up watering it down the way they did.
877-PLANNER. If you have questions, 877-752-6637. Room on the phones right now. Any money question you have, you can give us a call and talk to us about it. Bob in Houston, Texas says this: I stand to inherit $800,000 in guaranteed fixed annuities and was told I had the option to keep them in the annuity rather than take the cash in order to avoid taxes. Is this true?
No, not exactly. Now, with an annuity, the beneficiary is going to live up to whatever the annuity contract says. Most of the time, the annuity contract is saying they have very limited options. Lump sum, some may allow you to take it out over 5 years, unless it was set up in advance to pay out over a life expectancy. Some insurance companies will give the beneficiary the choice to stretch it out over a number of years. Now, the law allows stretching it out, but the annuity contract may or may not allow the beneficiary to stretch it out. In every case, they're going to make you start taking money out in the not too distant future. Now, inheriting an annuity, a non-qualified personal annuity, how much is taxable depends on how much is deferred gain in the contract. If you're inheriting $800,000 worth of annuities and the basis in those annuities is $800,000, it's no taxable event to begin with. But if you're inheriting $800,000 of annuities that the people have had for a long time, and you know maybe they put in $300,000 into these annuities back in 1989, well, you've got $500,000 of deferred gain in there. All $500,000 will be taxable at some point to somebody. Live or die, it's going to come out as a taxable event. And so there has been a new ruling that was issued, I think 2 years ago now, on a beneficiary. The owner of an annuity has always been able to go from one annuity to another annuity under what's known as a 1035 tax-deferred exchange. And in doing so, the owner had to be the same, the annuitant had to be the same, and typically the beneficiary is the same, although we could change it once we got to the new contract. For many years, it was understood that you couldn't do that with a beneficiary because one of the key elements was the owner had to be the same. And by definition, the owner is changing on the beneficiary. Well, there was a recent private letter ruling, and a private letter ruling is one person asking the IRS to rule on one specific situation. And a private letter ruling only applies to that exact situation. But it does give people some idea of what the IRS is thinking. So a lot of times when a PLR comes out, the industry tries to say, well, then it's available for everybody. Some companies are following what that private letter ruling said, which means that you can do a 1035 exchange as a beneficiary. But to make it a valid 1035 exchange, it has to be paid out under the same terms or faster than the original contract. So if the original contract didn't allow you to stretch it out, you can't do a 1035 into one that does. If the original one did, you can move it to another one that allows you to stretch it out. So it's trying to just give you a little bit of flexibility from the company standpoint, not from the payout standpoint necessarily. Not all companies are accepting this PLR. Now, only a few of them. I think as time goes, more will, but we'll see how that happens. But 800,000, you're probably going to have to start taking it out over the next, you know, 5-10 years at the most.
It's not really like some kind of RMD, though. I mean,
well, technically the rules are just like RMD rules for an IRA.
But yeah, but it's really not.
But the insurance companies tend to make them more restrictive.
Yeah. Well, I guess why? Because
they don't want to deal with
they
it.
They don't want to. It's better to just have it gone, I guess.
Yes, I don't know.
I mean, it seems strange because I'm listening as we're talking about it. It sounds like, well, that's almost like a required minimum distribution right out of the
it is
annuity.
A required minimum distribution. And but why the insurance company wants to get rid of the money, I don't know why. I would expect them to say, "He'll only take the minimum because they want to keep the money."
Well,
of them just pay it out.
Exactly. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. All right, Bob in Cottage Grove, Oregon. Hang on. We're going to get to your call. I want to make sure we give you all the time you need to ask your question. So we'll do so when we come back. 877 Planner. More coming up with the Brain Trust when we return. There it is. This is perfect. 877 Planner, PLANER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Just a couple of minutes here. You got your calls in. We can try to get to another email as well. And trivia, if we have time, but we do take calls first, of course. Let's continue on. Let's go next to Bob in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I think we actually read an email fairly recently from Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hello, this is Bob.
Hi,
How
Bob.
How you guys doing? Thanks for calling. Thanks a lot for taking my email.
Oh, no, we're happy to do it. That's why we wanted to get you up next, because I know we did read your email a little while ago. So you've got a question for us.
Yeah, it was about, I was planning on rolling over my 401k into a Roth IRA, and I wondered, should I do it all at once or break it up, or what would be the best stay in that 15% tax bracket? That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I would definitely not do it all at once with $800,000 in the 401k. That was the number you gave us from the email earlier.
Well, it says 1.3 million.
Oh, 1.3. I'm sorry, I've got the wrong one.
Yeah, right.
Well, if 800, I'm not going to do it once. I'm not going to do 1.3 either. I would do it in pieces. The question is, do I want to use up the 15% bracket or do I want to use up the 15 and the 25? And we talked about that a little bit ago, but it has to do with how much are you willing to bite the bullet right now and pay in taxes. I definitely would do the 15% bracket, take it right to the top of the 15. Whether I do the 25 or not, that's another decision to make. I wouldn't go past the 25. I would be doing it over in pieces. Each year, every year, I would do as much as I could in the bracket that I've decided to use and continue doing that for as long as I can until my required minimum distribution hits. And then when my RMD hits, if I still have room, I'll continue to do conversions. If not, now I got to decide whether I'm going to use the next bracket up on top of that as well, since I'm going to go into another, if I go into another bracket. I would definitely not do it all at once.
So the 15% bracket is rolling over $25,000?
It depends on whether you take your Social Security now or not. Do you have longevity in your life?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be around until about 90, I'm sure. I'm an avid bicyclist. So
all right.
I'm on no medication, no medical problems at all.
Well, sweet. So then in that case, I would potentially wait to take my Social Security, at least until 66, maybe until 70, live off of whatever I need to take out of to live and see if I still have room in the 15% bracket. And again, maybe even higher than that, the 25. And then when I get to age 70, especially if I've been doing the 25% bracket, I've probably got a big chunk, if not most, of the IRA over to the Roth, and my required minimum distribution will be relatively small. I'd have to do some math and do some strategic planning with you. But I might consider rolling 100% of it to a traditional IRA now and then just do the conversions from traditional IRA to Roth IRA. It makes it a little bit easier if you change your mind to undo it.
Okay. All right. Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
All right, Bob. Hang on if you need some help with this, because, it's a question of, obviously, for doing it all at once is going to create a huge tax problem. You know, 1.3 million.
Yeah, 1.3. No. We don't do that.
Now, if people had heard the email when we read it. It was about a half hour ago or so when we talked about it. You had mentioned doing it not just in his current bracket, but putting it up into perhaps the next bracket.
Yeah, I don't think that his current bracket, especially, let's say he needs $2,000 a month to live, so that's $24,000. He can only do about another $20,000, $25,000 of conversions. Well, I'm taking $50,000 a year out of a $1.3 million portfolio.
And converting it.
In total. Yes. Some of it to live off of, some of it to convert. That isn't drawing down that portfolio by a very big number. So it's going to stay at 1.3, or it's going to grow from here, which means that my required minimum distribution, even after starting to take my Social Security, is going to be $50,000 or more.
That's what, a 4% withdrawal rate?
Yeah, a little under.
Really, right?
Yeah.
So
I would say, let's see if we can do a little bit more, because let's push forward, and my required minimum distribution is $50,000 plus. I'm going to be getting $36,000 from Social Security. Not all the Social Security will be taxable, because worst case scenario is 85%. Let's say 30 of it's taxable plus 50. I'm at 80,000. I'm going to be in the 25% bracket anyway, and that's assuming it doesn't grow much. So if I'm going to be in 25% from age 70 to 90,
right,
I might as well see if I can do 25% for the next 8 years and then bring myself out of the 25% bracket later on.
So it's do you stay in a higher bracket for the next few years?
The next eight
seven
years.
Or 8 years, and then lower it because now you've got tax-free growth in the Roth and distributions?
Yeah.
Or do you,
well,
then 20 years after that,
distributions are going to be a lot smaller.
Yeah.
If I can get my, get converted over and get it down to $400,000. Now my RMD is $16,000. $16,000, that means that very little of my Social Security is taxable at that point.
Yeah.
Almost none. And so I'm in a much lower tax bracket going forward. So I would look to try to get as much as I could without really shooting myself in the foot over to Roth between now when I hit my required minimum distribution age and I turn on my big, juicy, wonderful Social Security benefit at age 70.
Yes, which, as you said, could be close to like $3,000.
And he said he's an avid cyclist. There's some super sweet bicycles you can get, and you got the money to buy whatever you want. Some of them, I went by with one road bike. I went to lift it up. I swear it must have been filled with helium.
Because you're one hand.
I almost had to push it back down. It was like floating.
These are the jokes, folks.
They were so light.
Well, I saw your interest peaked when he said, "I'm a cyclist," and you just kind of,
cycling's fun. I actually did a 10-mile mountain bike ride last night.
Okay, well,
about time I got back on the bike.
Are you not going to live to 90 though?
If I could start doing 10, 20, 30 miles on mountain bikes a day,
that's what I mean, which probably isn't going to happen.
So, I'm not.
No, you're not. Now, coming up on this program tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Roth or traditional IRAs. We just mentioned Roth conversions.
Yes.
And Roth IRAs and the benefits of Roth IRAs. Now, for some people, or at least for some in the media, still say Roth is always the best way to go. Now,
there was an article just recently on Roth 401ks and how now 50% of the companies are offering it, but there's still only about 10% of the people using them. So they're underutilized. Why aren't more people using the Roth 401k? Well, because the Roth IRA is better. And if you're in a situation where the Roth IRA doesn't work, the 401k probably doesn't work for you either.
Yeah, which is another good point. Now, since we're talking Roth or traditional IRA, I think we might as well just throw in the Roth 401k or the regular 401k, if that happens to be an option for some people.
To Roth or not to Roth?
Yeah, actually, that is
the question.
That's really probably going to be the more overarching topic tomorrow. Roth or not to Roth, whether it's an IRA or traditional. Keeping in mind that if it's a Roth IRA or traditional IRA, it's still an IRA. If it's a Roth 401k or traditional 401k, it's still a 401k.
Yes.
And the rules with those all, they continue on.
'Tis better in the eyes of man to pay taxes today or defer until another day.
We're going to have to defer everything else till another day. That's good. These profound thoughts right out of Professor Plum. If you want some more of these off the air, you can talk to Professor Plum. He will wax philosophic with you and talk to you about your retirement. 800-644-1150. The number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. For the professor, I am Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, Indiana, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.